morning again. Okay, let's just check and make sure this is working. But you can all hear me anyway, right? Or do I need to start yelling? I can yell. Pastors are good at it. Like, we're trained in it. We're professional yellers. We find ourselves this morning back in Malachi, in this last book of the Old Testament, this book of the prophet. Malachi is a bit of an interesting book. It's written in an interesting style. It's actually written as a series of complaints and replies. It starts off with God making some complaints against the people of Israel and their replies to him about them and then him telling them what they would do. And it's actually going to devolve into Israel making some complaints against God as well. But it's written in the style nearly of a legal case of this is my complaint against you, this is my evidence, and this is what I want you to do. We find ourselves today dealing with the second of those complaints. In the first one, God had charged that he had loved them, and Israel disputed that, saying, well, how have you loved us? And he said, well, I chose you. I chose you, and that's how you know I've loved you. In the second one, God has something to say. And if you look in your bulletins, I didn't call this sermon Worship That Dishonors God. I called it Used Car Offerings. Now, how many of you have ever bought a used car? Some of you, maybe. It's one of those experiences in life that some of you will go through as you hit 16 and 17, probably. Or at least if you grew up in my house, you did, because there was no way my dad was giving you a new car. But it's an interesting thing buying a used car, because you have to watch what you're buying. How many of you ever bought something and it's not what you expected? Some of you? Yeah, a while back, Joy likes to shop for clothes on eBay. I don't know if any of the rest of you shop eBay. But Joy decided to buy this sweater from eBay, and it was so cheap, $5. And so she bought it, and it shipped to us. And she bought it in an extra large size just to make sure it would be big enough. And when it came to our house, it was big enough to probably fit on one of my hands. It was tiny. It was not as expected. Years ago, when I worked in Chapters, we had complaints about people who would come in and tell us that they'd bought iPads from people off Craigslist or eBay, and they'd paid money, and when it got to their house, it was an iPad box with a block of wood inside. They hadn't checked. In the same way, when you buy a used car, you have to go around the car. You have to check. What's the oil level? How many kilometers does it have on it? Is there anything wrong with the engine? What does it sound like? Take it for a test drive. Is there tread left on the tires? Does the guy actually own this car, or is it stolen? You have to make sure that everything is as it seems, because sometimes it's not, even as it should be. And Jesus here, God has that same complaint about Israel. Starts with this idea that there is honor due him and fear due him. And not fear in the sense of being terrified of him, but awe of his position and his power. He goes, those are due me, and yet you don't give them to me. And Israel, of course, goes, wait, well, of course we do. Well, how can you say we don't? And he goes, because you pollute my offerings. He goes, you come to the temple, and if you followed with us as we've gone through the Old Testament, you know that there were a number of times during the year and at various activities and places in your life that you had to give offerings. So you would come to the temple and you would buy some doves, or you would bring a goat or a sheep, and you would make an offering. He goes, and when you come, you don't bring what you're supposed to. See, way back in the law of Moses, in Leviticus and Deuteronomy, it was established that when you brought your offering to God, it was to be the finest of the animals you had, without blemish, without issue, the choice out of all of them. And he goes, except when you guys come, you bring me the lame and the blind and the sick. And you think I won't notice? Looks at them and he goes, listen, would you bring that to your boss or to the governor? He goes, would you take that goat that's puking and march it up to the leaders and go, here, this is for you, and expect them to look favorably on you? Great, you brought us the diseased one, the one we can't use. He goes, and yet you bring it to me and you expect me to smile upon you. Nah, that ain't the way this works. He goes, listen, this is about honoring me. And to honor me, you have to bring me the best of what you have, not the worst. More importantly, he goes, my name is great, and I'm trying to teach the other nations that my name is great through you, and how are they going to learn if you guys don't get it? In fact, he goes, it's so wearisome to me that I just wish someone would go up to my temple and slam the door shut and lock them so that you couldn't even offer anything. Make me happier if you offered nothing than offering what you're offering. At least then you'd be being honest about the situation. He says, but you snort at that. And you keep doing it. See, the issue that Israel runs into is a couplefold, and it's still an issue we face today, as with a lot of the issues we see Israel facing, and a lot of the things that the prophets talk to them about. See, the issues that they're facing are issues like trust. Well, if I give God the best, then I won't have it. And what if I need it? What if something happens and I need that one perfect animal that I have? What if my son gets married? Or my daughter gets engaged and I need to offer up something to the other family. And I don't have that great animal because I offered it up to God. That might ruin the engagement or the wedding. What if I need it to purchase some land or to see me through a really rough season? I can't offer it up. I might need it. They want to understand that part of the reason that they're supposed to offer the best is a trust statement. I give God what is my best, trusting that he will provide for me more, trusting that he will care for me. They're trying to build and strengthen themselves by their own hands rather than trusting that God will look after them, rather than trusting that he has their best interests at heart. It's a little bit like a trust fall. Any of you ever done a trust fall? Or seen it on TV, right? Falling back into somebody's arms. The idea is that you have to trust them enough to know that they'll catch you. And in this case, the idea is giving to God what he's due, trusting that he'll provide. That's tricky. Because it means trusting. And we're not good at that. I mean, what if we need it? The other issue that we run into is an issue that we have and that Israel has, and that's we don't want to offer God the best. We're selfish. We want it for us. God will never know the difference. I mean, what does he need this goat or sheep for anyway? He's God. It's not really doing him any good. It's better if I keep it for me or for us. Well, God doesn't care if I went to church last Sunday or if I've been reading my Bible and studying or if I'm doing what I should do as far as offering up my time and my service. He doesn't need any of that. He's God. Why should I do that? Why should I make sure I come to fellowship? Why should I make sure that I spend time reading the scriptures? why should I do any of that? Why should I offer up these things when I could be doing something that I think is more important? Why should I encourage my kids to go to fellowship when they could be at home studying? Isn't it more important that they get a better education and they get a good job? Right? Isn't that more important? I mean, God understands, right? Except God goes, no, I should be the most important thing. I should be the thing you provide most honor to. I should be the thing that inspires you with awe and fear. And if I'm not, you've mistaken our relationship, because you're not giving me what I'm due. Could you imagine, for those of you who have jobs, if you decided one week that you were only going to work 20 hours instead of 40? What would your boss do? What would he say to you, right? He'd go, hey, you're not giving me what's due. It's here in your contract. You work 40 hours a week. I'm not doing this. You want to do this? You can get fired. But we do the same thing to God. God goes, I am due all honor and respect. And we go, okay, we'll give you a little bit of honor and respect. He goes, no, I want all of it. I want to be the primary thing. And you guys make it that I'm a secondary thing. That when there's extra time or an extra animal that's maybe not so great, well, that God can have. No, that's not the way this works. In fact, that's abhorrent to me. I am the Lord God, whose name is going to be praised among the nations. And you're going to offer me second best? You're going to offer me that which you don't want for yourself? That's not good enough. I want the best. I want to be the ultimate thing in your life. And that's not saying that there aren't other good things. There are. But the issue is, as a theologian once said wisely, when we take a good thing and we make it the ultimate thing, like God, we get our priorities mixed up. And we teach that to others. We take this good thing and we make it an ultimate thing. We teach that to others. We teach them that they too can make other good things ultimate things. It's an interesting thing that happens, and it happens every year, is I'll have at least one meeting with a parent where they'll go, why is my kid not following God? Why doesn't he want to come to church? Why doesn't he want to be in fellowship? Why is he doing all these things? And when I worked at the university, it would usually involve them coming in and about the second or third month of the semester crying and going, my son and daughter, they've fallen off. They don't go to church. They moved in with their boyfriend or girlfriend. They're doing drugs or other things. And things are falling down. And I'd sit in my office and I'd go, well, what did you model for them when they were in your care? Oh, well, you know, we went to church when we had time, when they didn't need to study or go to soccer or baseball or some other sport, or when they didn't have other extracurricular activities. And sometimes we had them involved in fellowship or other things the church was doing, you know, as long as it didn't conflict with their studies or their other activities. Because, you know, we needed those things to make sure that they got into a good school. And I'd look at them and go, so you, for your entire life, you've modeled to them that God should have second or third place, that he's less important than their studies, he's less important than their extracurriculars, he's less important than this other thing. And now you're surprised that they don't place a high priority on God? They're doing what you taught them. If every day you take your kid out and play baseball with him, and tell him that baseball was important, don't be surprised when he thinks baseball is important when he's an adult. If every day you tell your kid studying is the important thing, and instead of going to fellowship, you should study more because you got to pass that test, and get into a good university, don't be surprised when they think school is more important than church. And when they grow up, they think other things are more important than God. Because you've modeled it for them. You've taught them what they should care about. In the same way here, God is saying, when you do this, when you offer up the wrong things, when you don't offer me what comes first, what is best, when you don't make me the ultimate purpose of what you're doing, you defile me. And you no longer remain my people. Israel has this issue repeatedly. God becomes second, third, fourth priority. And he has to remind them, no, I am to be your first priority, your first love. Think about it. What's the first commandment? Okay, somebody tell me, because y'all went to Sunday school, somebody got to know the first commandment. I am the Lord your God, you shall have no other gods before me, right? And yet continually we make other gods, whether it's money or a good job or a better car or our relationship or this or that. We make other gods. And then we're surprised when God is ticked off that he's second and third place. It doesn't work that way, guys. It's like being married and telling your wife, well, you're important, but my car's more important than you are. It's a really good way to have her smash your car. God goes, no, I'm the most important thing in your life, and I need to be. And if I'm not, not pleased by that. That's what he's telling Israel here. He goes, if I'm the most important thing, you would give me the honor and respect I was due. You wouldn't be interested in offering me things that I don't want. To put it another way, some of you are dating or married, which meant you dated at one point, presumably. Could you imagine going on a date and deciding that you were going to bring your beloved week-old flowers that you'd found on the side of the road or dying in the store because they were all they had? Would they have liked that? You know, here I brought you these roses. They're half dead. That would have gone over swimmingly, right? Guys? Okay, you're all going to get in trouble later. I can't help you. No, it wouldn't, right? She would have gone, well, what are you? No! If you love me, you bring me what is best. You bring me the flesh ones, the expensive ones. I spent a little bit of my young life working in a gas station. And I dealt with this. You would have guys rush in and buy these, like, old dying flowers that we had. And you just knew it wasn't going to go well for them. You know? At one point, one of the guys looked at me and he's like, yeah, I'm going to take these home for my girlfriend. I owe her an apology. And I was like, yeah, this ain't going to work. I really hope you like that couch. Because half-dead flowers and a chocolate bar from the gas station are not what she wants. But in the same way, God goes, you bring me what is best. If you love me, if you respect me, if you honor me, you bring me what is best. You don't bring me the lame, the sick, the dying. That's not honor and respect. That's cheating me. That's looking at me and going, aha, another sucker. I can pass this off on him. And so often we do that. So often we take the king of the universe and we treat him like he has no priority. And God ends this passage by saying to them, my name will be great and it will be known to the ends of the earth. doesn't matter what you do. My name will be great. But if you want to be part of my kingdom, then you need to figure out what it means to give me the honor and fear I deserve. Maybe we need to figure that out.